You can't change the password on Simplecast.
You don't know that.
I do know that because I'm the owner.
Unless I've hacked your account.
You haven't hacked my account.
It's possible.
It's not possible.
Everything is possible, Brian. I thought it wasn't possible for me to get hacked, but yet I was.
So on that bombshell. Hey, Mickey, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, Brian. I'm good. Welcome, everyone, to DevOps FM. Brian wouldn't let me yell DevOps because he said it was really, really loud. So DevOps.
DevOps.
Can you name that 80s movie?
Dressed to Kill.
Nope. Kill, 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 kill.
I don't remember.
That's Friday the 13th. That's the what you hear always when Jason is walking up about to kill somebody, or it's getting all creepy and eerily in the woods. You hear.
See, that's the thing. I never was a horror flick fan. In fact, I think we've discussed this. The only real 80s horror film I ever saw in the theater was Nightmare on Elm Street 3, the one with the Dawkins song, Dream Warriors. There you go.
Yeah. I liked the old Nightmare on Elm Streets. I didn't enjoy the Friday the 13th quite as much, but the Nightmare on Elm Streets I kind of got into. They got more campy as they went on.
No question about that.
Dream Warriors. We will have to make a note to include a link to the video for Dream Warriors.
You put that in the show notes.
I'm right. Putting that in the show notes.
Oh, look at that. Instant update, because we're using OneNote for some of our show notes, but we're also using Markdown, and that's another discussion. We'll talk about wikis later.
We'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about how we organize things a little bit next week. But let's talk about what's been going on with us this week. What's been going on with you, Brian?
It's been the nonstop work train, which is pretty awesome. Doing a bunch of updates to get apps from 2.2 to 3.1 of .NET Core and ASP.NET Core. Doing some work with Key Vault. So that's been a lot of it. The Rugrats were off school again on Monday. So they kind of did a little bit of terrorizing. Not too much, thankfully. The boy and I got to have lunch together. So, it's been pretty low key being home. So work has been the word. What have you been up to?
Well, last week was week 2 of getting part of the floors redone in the house. And that's finally done. The cats are no longer in the basement, which is a good thing and a bad thing, which I'll talk about in the post show. So if you want to know what I'm talking about there, you'll have to stick around for the post show. As you know, I do audiobooks. So I just finished an audiobook and submitted it to the author for review. And one of the audiobooks that I finished a couple of weeks ago went on sale yesterday. So I'm very excited about that. And otherwise, just been working, obviously doing my day job, getting ready for our trip next week, where we get to hang out for a couple of weeks and help a customer get more DevOpsy. And I've been working on my YouTube channel a little bit, but not as much as I need to. I need to get some more content up this week. I haven't added new content this week, but I have, because I got featured last week in DivineOps's roundup of DevOps information. I've gone up to 67 users now, and my intro to YAML pipelines video has gotten over 200 views. So I'm slowly getting there. My goal by the end of the quarter was to have at least 200 subscribers. And right now I'm tracking to potentially hit that.
Fantastic. That's great news.
The other thing I'm starting to realize, and I'm wondering this about you too, is when I really got into being an MVP back in 2005 and really started getting into the community and really just trying to get more technical and whatnot, I read blogs all the time. I had my feed reader and I put blogs in there and I would read them all the time. And I'm finding I don't do that much anymore. I've realized I've not checked my feed reader in 2 weeks. And I've also realized that a lot of the blogs that I used to follow are just dead. They haven't posted in years. So I guess habits change. The way you gather information's change. Video is much more prevalent now. But I was wondering if you still have a feed reader and read blogs and whatnot, because I'm finding I just don't do it as much anymore.
So I don't do as much in the reader. Now, part of it also is whether I'm traveling or not. So I will do a lot of reading on my iPad, and so I have the feed reader there. At home, I tend to go to a blog. I'll be thinking about something. I'll go, oh, I should go look at so-and-so. Now, the thing that's changed is the way I collect those links. I think we've talked about this, you and I. But I get a lot of the links on what should I be reading based upon what people post on Twitter, for example. And then I'll save those to Pocket. And so that is where I go to find my reading. So I'll put up Pocket, and I can do that on my web browser or on my iPad, and I'll be able to see things. And then what will happen is I tend to collect these things, kind of like, you know, books and other things. And then when I'm digging into a subject, I will go and search my Pocket history and start looking at interesting things. Or I'll see something come up on Twitter. For example, there's a bunch of conference season started full swing, as we've discussed. Other shows have been going on. There's NDC London's going on this week right now. Delivery Conf was last week. There's another show I've been seeing. There's a guy I follow who works at PagerDuty. Sorry, the name escapes me right now. And so a couple topics have come up there in threads. One of them was security. Patrick Dubois, who is one of the original luminaries in the DevOps space, he now works at Chef and focuses on security. He did a talk at Delivery Conf covering building secure pipelines, and he posted that on Twitter. He posted slides, he posted some links. And so that'll kind of drive, oh, I think I should go look at that. Next thing I know, I've got 20 tabs open related to something. So that's kind of what happens now. So the short answer is I don't use a feed reader or a news reader like I used to.
So I tend to do what you do. I find links on Twitter, and I do throw them in Pocket. I forget to go check Pocket, but I do have a bunch of stuff I've thrown into Pocket. I'm finding that mostly what I'm tracking in my feed reader right now are the webcomics I want to read. So I have two or three webcomics that I like to read. And then I track a little bit of gaming news, like IGN. I track their PC gaming news. I track their TV and their movie news, and that's okay for it to build up over time, and then I can just go, you know, pour through it when I'm ready. But I no longer really use it for individual, you know, reading what people are doing, other than Scott Hanselman, because my gosh, he is the most, every Tuesday, every Friday, I'm going to post something, so it always seems to show up in my feed.
I'm really convinced Scott is Borg. I'm not really sure Scott is really human.
I'm not either. I'm not sure when he sleeps.
And the thing is, this Scott has been this way forever. It's not just like a new thing. No, right? Scott is definitely been doing this a long time. You go to his blog, you look at his podcast. And then, you know, Scott's a really nice guy. I happen to be friends with him on Facebook, so I get to see some of his family photos. He seems to have a lovely family, lovely wife and a couple of children. And, you know, just... He seems a little just too well-rounded. So it's like, I'm not sure. I'm sure he's actually an experiment in Android technology.
I think he has a way to make more time in the day, and he just hasn't told anybody yet.
Yeah, he has a special device, I'm sure.
So what's going on in the news, Brian?
Well, I think starting with a DevOps one is Microsoft is going to be removing some older images in Azure pipelines. We'll have the link in the show notes, but specifically they announced today they're going to be, to use a Microsoft term, deprecating the Visual Studio 2015 build pool images. And so that just means that if you're relying upon those because you have not moved up to a later version of Visual Studio, you will have to get into the self-hosting business.
And this is kind of a big deal, because if you're using those images, they're going to go away, which means your pipelines are going to break.
It's not working. Now,
so
that's not entirely true.
Oh, well.
So there's a chance, depending upon your application, the VS 2017 build pools could work in theory. Okay,
agreed. But you need to test it and make sure it works and verify your pipelines are working. So this isn't one of those things where if you're using older versions of images that you can just kind of ignore. You got to pay a little bit of attention to it and make sure you're ready for it.
Right. And definitely when you think about good DevOps practices, randomly introducing new build images that you've never tested and deciding to ship production code off of them without any testing or anything else, yes, that would be really a bad thing.
I concur. That would be a bad thing.
So I see something else in the show notes that I already mentioned, but you put it in the show notes, so why don't you talk about it?
Which one did I put in the show notes that you've already mentioned?
Delivery Conf. I was talking about Patrick Dubois.
Oh, that's right. There we go. Hey, if I look at the right version of the show notes, if only we had a version control system somewhere where we could verify that I was looking at the correct version of the show notes.
This will be a good after show next week. We can talk about it, but yeah, go on.
So yes, so Delivery Conf 2020 has happened, and we've got a link in the show notes to the YouTube channel where they've got, you know, the talks and lively discussion that happened there. They've got a bunch of the different talks that they recorded. And for those of you that didn't know about the conference, it was one that Brian almost went to and I thought about going to, where basically we're having some discussion around the future of DevOps, you know, Azure DevOps, continuous delivery, GitHub Actions, anything and all things related to DevOps. Now, have you watched any of these videos? Because I have not yet, but I heard it went great.
No, I haven't. I did, as I mentioned, I saw stuff go through my Twitter feed because I follow a lot of the people who spoke there. And they had quite the studded, I guess, what would you call it? The speakers were some big names in the industry. Jez Humble was there, David Farley. Of course, they are the co-authors of the seminal text Continuous Delivery from Addison Wesley. And Patrick was there, as well as Dr. Nicole Forgson, who co-wrote Accelerate. Actually, it was really her baby, the ones that she did with Jez and Gene Kim. But the fundamental issue is that some really what I would consider entertaining speakers, smart people. So it looked good. It looked like a good conference. Downside was, you know, God, I love being home.
Well, especially when you're going to be on the road a good bit, February and March. So adding that one more trip can actually be a little bit of a pain. I concur.
Yeah. So that was it.
Ooh. So you have a link in here, continuously improving with Steve Porter. I like Steve Porter.
I love Steve Porter. So Steve Porter.
I don't know if I've ever met Steve Porter, but I've followed him online for a good bit.
You've never met Steve?
I don't know if I've ever met Steve. I might have met Steve, and I know we've communicated like via Twitter and other things before.
Steve's a really nice guy. He is with Scrum.org now. I knew him back, I first met him back in the TFS days, the VSTS days around 2006, 2007. And I was doing a job for Microsoft. And long story short is Steve helped out and did some work with reports and the reporting cube. He was a consultant with a company out of Canada. And if I remember correctly, Steve is from Manitoba. So if I get that wrong, hopefully someone will correct me.
He's Canadian.
He's definitely Canadian. Really?
I can do that because my boss is Canadian.
Really? Is that why you could do this? Well, yeah, speaking of your boss and Steve are compatriots at that former consulting company.
And I am actually an honorary Canadian for a couple of different reasons, because I did work for a Canadian company for 9 years. The Canadian MVPs actually gave me a Canadian hockey jersey, like the one that they wear at
when did you MVP get that? Summit. You hid that from me. Folks, you just now heard the last episode of DevOps Stuff FM with Mickey and Brian. You got a jersey.
Actually, I won it, if I remember correctly, from Barry Gervin.
I
won it.
But you never told me. You never showed it to me.
I didn't think it was that big a deal. It's just a Canadian hockey jersey. I don't even follow hockey. So
see, that makes it even worse.
Anyway, what is Steve? What is this link you've got about Steve Porter and continuously improving?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to listen to it. I saw it pop through on my Twitter feed today from Steve. Steve's a great guy. I love talking to him one-on-one. And so if he's doing a podcast, you'll want to take a listen to
it. Oh,
so
it's in the show notes. Okay.
Yeah, it's just an episode. Yeah. It's not, he's on someone else's podcast.
Oh,
it's not,
cool.
It's not his podcast.
Gotcha.
It's the Agile Wire podcast, I think. But anyway. So Steve's a good guy. Scrum to me is as an agile practice, fits very well into the world of DevOps. So take a listen to see what Steve has to say about continuously improving.
Now, Brian, I have a question for you, Brian.
Yeah.
Why would I want to run the old Edge when I can run the brand new fancy Chromium Edge that is just really awesome?
Application compatibility and testing. I mean, the reality is that you might build an application that behaves a certain way, particularly an internal application, where you may take advantage of knowing the fact that it is Edge and Edge behaves a certain way. Now, old Edge compared to the new Chromium-based Edge, you know, it hasn't been around as long. It's not like we're talking about Internet Explorer, okay? So it's not that significant, but I was surprised when I updated one of my VMs to see that they got rid of the old Edge. And I'm like, wait a minute, I might need to test for compatibility with that version of Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a link in the show notes that says, hey, if you still need the old Edge, here's how you can run them side by side. And the summary is simple. You need to not just download the RTW release and instead subscribe through the dev channel. And then the article also talks about using group policy and some stuff. But take a look at that. It's something that will not probably work forever. And it's something that obviously Microsoft doesn't want to support the old Edge anymore. So you're going to want to get off it. But yeah, just in case you need to do it, I thought that might be useful for some people.
And I got to lob this last one up to you because you're the Apple guy, not me. I struggle just to use my iPhone sometimes. But you point out that Apple's released a new iOS and macOS. And why do I care?
Well, it's, you know, because there was a theme that we're going to go for with tonight's show, and that is security. And the main reason why you want to get iOS 13.3.1 is it's got security updates.
That would make sense.
I'm always thinking.
Every time I update any app on my phone, is it security updates?
No, why would that be?
I just never know. Could be, I guess, but probably not. It's usually just more functionality, depending on what game I'm playing. Which the game I'm playing right now is What the Golf.
You're playing a game?
And if you
while we talk?
No, but the game I have on my phone that I play from time to time is What the Golf. So you should check that out.
I don't play games on my phone.
Your phone's for work. Do you even make phone calls on your phone? Or do you just like use apps and text on your phone?
Actually, I do. And in fact, I can tell you that today I made 5 calls today. We're outbound. I got 2 inbound calls that were good, and then I got I got another one that was good. It's just I didn't care. It's my kid's school. And
education's overrated.
No, our school district is very, very transparent and communicative, and I love that. However, my child's junior high school will call my cell phone, my office phone, my wife's cell phone, the house phone, as well as they will text us and email. So we get 8 versions of the same thing when they do it.
Wow, they need to figure that out a little bit.
Yeah, then we need a little more optimization because it's a bit ridiculous. And the thing, of course, is tonight's update was not significant.
Gotcha. So you said that you included the link for the iOS updates because of the fact that they had bug fixes and they were dealt with security. So
yes.
What's our show topic about today, Brian, since we've probably rambled for about 20 minutes now about everything else under the sun?
The topic is security. And this started because of last week, because Mickey has a story to tell. So, Mickey, why don't you tell us what happened with your Twitch account?
So I have a Twitch account because I've been threatening, as probably most people know, for months to, you know, start streaming DevOps. And I haven't done it yet, but maybe one day. But I get a notification. Now, let's back this up before the Twitch account. I got a notification that someone had tried to reset one of my email passwords. So I went, okay, that could potentially be, oh, no. Sorry, I'm babbling. But here's what happened. I got an email saying that I bought $50 worth of gemstones on eBay. Now, I haven't used eBay since, 2013 maybe. But I went and looked, and sure enough, someone had charged $50 worth of gemstones from somebody in China on eBay. So I went, okay. So I've obviously been hacked. So I shut that account down, and then I went, oh crap. And Brian, do you know why I went, oh crap?
Because it's quite possible that that account had a password that was used in another account.
Correct. Because Mickey, while he tells everyone else to do the right thing, assumes that nothing's going to happen to him. So therefore, he doesn't follow best practices and instead had three or four passwords that he just, would rotate through. So I went, oh crap, that was probably one of those three or four passwords. What else might be using that password? So I went and changed some of my vital areas like banking and email addresses and stuff, and changed those. And I thought I was like, okay, I think I'm okay. Now, admittedly, I've got, probably 80 other websites that I have user IDs and passwords for that still are using those three or four email addresses. And just for grins, I went and looked at Have You Been Pwned? And yes, I could see that my, Yahoo account and other stuff had been pawned in the past. So this brings us to last week when I get a notification that my Twitch email address has been changed to Mickey Gousset at CF695 dot blah blah. And I went, okay, this is bad. So Twitch says, if you didn't do this, click here to reset your email password. Well, guess how Twitch resets your email password?
They send you an email to your email,
which is no longer my email account. So effectively, someone took my old password, got in, changed my password in my account, and then changed the email address associated with my account as well. Now, where this got a little frustrating for me is there is no number to call Twitch. The only option you have is to go through their automated help desk and fill out a form on their website. And this is obviously a problem because they even have a category for it of your account's been hacked. And their solution to your account's been hacked, as far as if you read their docs where they say, read this before you submit, is click this link. Guess what that link does?
Takes you to the page to reset your password and send you an email to your old email.
No, not to the old email, though, but sends it to the email that's currently on the account.
Oh, the currently one on the account. Yes.
Which is the one that I can't get to. So I fill out the form, and my biggest problem with all of this is it took them 5 days before they responded and said, oh, we're going to set your password to this temporary password. You now need to log in and change everything. So that's 5 days where if I'd had credit cards or other thing attached to my Twitch account for buying things, I could have been completely screwed. Now, during that process of while I'm waiting for my Twitch account to get fixed, I'm like, okay, I need to do something better. So I need to go change every password I have. Now, I have actually been using a desktop program called KeePass, which is an open source program that I was using. But I decided I needed to use something that I could also run on my phone and would also integrate with my browser. So I started moving everything. I started taking all my things I have in KeePass and moving them into LastPass, which I can have an app on my phone. I have it integrates my browser, it stores them in a key vault. And what I found was, wow, I have a lot of sites that I log into. And I've got to have a different password for each one. Now, one of the things that I like about LastPass is that it will generate a really gobbledygook password for you. So you don't have to remember it. And that was working great until every once in a while you hit a website that actually has restrictions on you can't have exclamation points or things like that in your password. And at that point, I was like, okay. But I did make a – so for every one of my freaking logins now has its own unique password. And for every system I could – and I'll shut up in a second, but for every system that I could, I turned on two-factor authentication. I've now got three – I've got to figure out a way to make this better. But I've now got three different authentication systems on my phone. So I can either get text messages or I can go into the right authentication app. And needless to say, it was painful. And I'm hoping I don't have to go through it again anytime soon. But this should be a lesson to any of our listeners out there. If you're rotating the same three or four passwords and you think you're secure, you're not. I'm going to take a breath. Does that about sum up how I've been complaining to you for the past 2 weeks?
Yes. Now, I'm going to start in reverse because you brought up your phone. And I have a similar issue that I use multi-factor authentication. I have two different apps on my phone for that currently. I have the Microsoft Authenticator app, and then I have the Google version, and each one of those supports other accounts. Now, that said, there's a couple things. Number one, what happens if you lose your phone? That becomes this thing. Have you fully documented your process and how you're going to solve that? Then the other thing to be aware of is that your phone is one way you can do multi-factor authentication. Another way is something like YubiKeys. Okay, and I got a couple of these. And I got my first one, with love, from GitHub, of all people. And this is something you can plug into your machine, and it will take care of authenticating. You don't even have to type a password in. So that's kind of nice. But yeah, it is. It's frustrating that you had to go through it, but sometimes you have to get hit over the head to change your ways.
So you mentioned, what am I going to do? If I lose my phone, won't cry, but I do have my phone being backed up into the cloud. So in theory, I can recover most of the information, at least since my last backup, from onto a new phone. But the fact is, LastPass, since it is storing everything in the cloud, I would still have access to all of my user IDs and passwords from any other machine, because with LastPass, all I have to remember is the super secret password that I've set to get into my vault, which is really freaking huge and long. And if somebody freaking guesses that, then you
give up.
You might deserve to have all my passwords at that point.
Now, do you have this super long, huge password remembered?
It's in my head.
It is in your head.
Yes, it's in my head. I'm not going to write it down.
I'm impressed.
In theory, what I should probably do is write it down and then put it in like a lockbox so that if I get hit by a bus, somebody has access to all of my accounts and has access to what they would need to, you know, do whatever.
Yeah, I did that. That's actually a few years ago. We have a safe at home, and I realized that I had a lot of stuff that if something happened to me, my poor wife would be just completely at her wit's end. So I have information on how to get onto my main desktop as well as the master passwords. But then what I did to make this a little better is we started moving to 1Password family. So I still use LastPass, but we also have 1Password going in the house, and my wife and I have a shared setup so that she can get to a lot of the things that matter to her. Like, she doesn't need some of my work things.
Now, is 1Password just another password manager similar to like LastPass, or?
It is. And I have reasons why I didn't pick one or the other in the beginning. I found LastPass, I think when I first started, was more compatible with my work style, workflow and everything else when I first started. But then 1Password came out, and it was very popular in the Mac world and iOS. But they didn't have a great Windows experience initially. And then, but when they came out with the 1Password for families, that was a really nice setup. So I thought, well, I'll do both. So I've got both right now. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I've got, you know, kind of some separation of concerns there, but yeah.
So we talked about passwords, and we actually talked a little bit last week about how, you know, there used to be the general consensus out there of you need to change your password every 6 months, and how that's not necessarily true anymore, depending on how, but you need to make sure you have a secure password.
Exactly. And when we're seeing this with Windows providing different ways to log in, to where they're trying to get you away from having to use a password, or at least a password that might be used somewhere else and create, you know, a compromised situation. So Windows Hello, I have it on my ThinkPad, and I can log in both with the camera as well as a fingerprint reader.
Yeah, I'd have that too. I have that on my Surface laptop. I use Windows Hello, which sometimes can be a little annoying because I'll lock my laptop, but before I get away from my laptop, the camera will grab my face and then it'll unlock my laptop.
Yeah, sometimes it's a little too good. So I've gotten the habit of when I'm turning on and I know I'm going to log in remotely, for example, at home to it, I put my hand in front of the camera and look away. And then I'll RDP in. And once I've RDP in, if it sees me, it'll go, oh, you're logged in remote. And then what I'll do is I usually close the lid anyway once I'm booted up. But yeah, I've had that issue as well.
And I've noticed, you know, I can log in with Windows Hello and I can log in with my password, but I can also set a PIN on my account. And it even tells me that that using a PIN is more secure than using my password. I haven't quite figured out why using a PIN is more secure than using my password.
Well, number one, because the PIN is local, is one of the reasons. Because I thought the same thing. Because, you know, they tell you
it doesn't float with your account. Okay,
it's bound to that combination of machine, user account, and OS installation. So. Okay. Yeah, that one I thought about it at first as well. And I read an article on it, and some of it I didn't understand. Because, you know, it's just basic geeks. We think, well, yes, I can crack a short numeric-only password quicker than I can an alphanumeric one with special characters, right? So, because that's what I thought. I was like, that seems kind of stupid. But then you realize that PIN, and this is why you don't use the same PIN on every laptop, does not transfer to the cloud.
Okay, that makes sense. So, Brian, I want to throw some quick questions at you, and then I'll give my response, but I want to see what you do with some certain situations.
Sure. Yeah, I'm kind of compulsive. Ask away.
So, laptop privacy screens, meaning the screen you put over your laptop to where you have to can only see the screen if you look straight on. Yes or no?
No.
Why?
Too much hardware. It affects the crispness of the screen. And honestly, I don't do really super secret stuff on places where someone can look over my shoulder. So on the plane, I'm doing a lot of boring stuff. I'm not looking at, you know, security schematics. I'm not doing, you know, anything.
You
really
don't do all your spy work on the plane is what you're saying.
Basically, no.
So I used to be a no. I have gotten one now for my Surface and I kind of like it. Just because I realized that I was doing more work on planes, in lounges, stuff like that. Again, I'm not necessarily doing super secret stuff, but we do have things that come across our desk that's NDA that you don't necessarily just want to have out there. So, but I do find it annoying because I forget it's on there, and then I'll say, hey, look at this on my screen to somebody next to me, and they can't because they can't see it unless they get right over my shoulder. Okay? So. Question, do you lock your luggage?
Yes.
Why?
I took a trip back in 1996. True story. Let's just say this is when Brian and his wife were just getting started. We had budget constraints. And I was going to speak at a conference in Nice, France. Having to be Tech Ed 1996 in Nice. and I didn't have any luggage. So I borrowed a suitcase from my mama. And this suitcase was a cloth padded. It wasn't a hard shell. It was a soft shell suitcase. And it had been around for a while, as suitcases from your mama can be. And I made it all the way to Nice, which was, I flew LA to Chicago, Chicago to Paris, Paris to Nice, and then something in reverse. And there's a story about the flight to Chicago. But anyway, when I landed in LA and was waiting for my bag, I see my bag coming out. And what do you think I see? I see my bag wrapped in twine and things like my underwear hanging out.
Literally like a movie, is what you're saying.
Yes, the suitcase had busted open. So I put locks on my suitcase as just an extra little bit to hopefully the thing will not pop open. That's it. Because, yes, I use TSA-approved locks. And depending upon when or where I travel, now I've moved very heavily to carry-on only. I mean, I really try to avoid checking. But if I do check, my current luggage of choice happens to be Pelican cases. Those who have seen me with my Pelican cases know that they're pretty beefy, pretty tough. The problem is the TSA and most customs inspectors, when they see my Pelican cases, always want to go, what's in that? So if I do check it with locks, it gets opened probably 75% of the time.
I can confirm that happens. I've been with Brian when that happens. So I do not. I think my suitcase has a TSA-approved lock on it, but I've just never – I've always assumed so far that no one would open it to take anything. I've never thought about the fact that what if the lock just gives out, though, like the main locking mechanism or the zipper just kind of gives out. I've never really thought about that, so I'll have to consider that a little bit.
Yeah, it just – once again, it makes me feel better, you know, whatever.
Okay. Do you lock your car doors?
Yeah, I'm compulsive. I also live in Los Angeles, well, outside of Los Angeles.
I lock my car doors always. Even if I'm just like getting out for like 30 seconds to walk over somewhere and walk back, I lock my car doors.
Yeah.
Do you lock your house doors even when you're home?
Yes, I do.
I lock mine during the day, during the evening, even when I'm home, because that's how my daddy raised me.
Yeah, too many weirdos around. I live, unfortunately, close to a freeway, which, unfortunately, statistically has increased the crime rate for us because it provides an easy on-off aspect. So the other thing is, I have family members here, and, you know, it's not a big deal to keep it locked. Now, that said, would I love to live in a world where my door was unlocked and I didn't worry about it? Absolutely. But, you know.
Well, last one. So, do you lock your hotel rooms with all those little extra locking mechanisms they provide, like where you can turn the latch on the door and then you can also open up, you can also turn the little square thing on the door where the door will only open about 2 inches. And so if people are opening from the outside, they can't actually open the door all the way?
Yes, I do.
So I am hit or miss with that. I'll do it if I think about it, but I don't necessarily always do it.
So the reason I do it, once I know, is normally I do it when I'm going to sleep because I will be asleep. The problem is hotels sometimes mistakenly will give people the wrong key. Since we've, you know, I can't tell the last time I stayed in a hotel with a physical real key. I have. I've been doing this long enough. But in today's age, I have walked in people's rooms when they were in there, and they have walked in on mine. So, yes.
Wow. Okay. See, I've not had that happen to me. But
yeah, luckily, it's always been during the day. So, like, I'll have it happen to me, whereas I get the key and I'm checking in. So, it's usually a reasonable time of the day. I've flown into hotels where I've gotten in at, like, 5 in the morning, you know, so who knows. But the point is, yes, I do.
And listeners, I highly recommend that if you ever see Brian at a conference, that you go grab him, go grab your favorite beverage, offer to buy him his favorite beverage, and he can probably give you some great travel tales. So, because Brian's been doing this a lot longer than I have, and he has some really good stories, some of which might be true.
Wow. So we covered a lot of security. That's just the personal side of security, Mickey. I think we might need to, how long have we been going?
It doesn't matter. As long as people are listening and downloading.
But see, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about that we've overstayed our welcome. Have we overstayed our welcome today?
No, we have not. Let's talk a little bit then about, you know, I guess since we have DevOps in the title, let's talk a little bit about security and DevOps, and then we can get to what people really care about, which is the post show.
Okay. Well, the thing that I was thinking about for security, first of all, is, you know, what do you talk about? And that's probably problem number one. I've done talks on security-related things for DevOps, and it's a huge area. So I started thinking of the top thing. The first thing that came to mind was this term that people have thrown out, DevSecOps. And my initial view on it was, I don't think we need other terms, in fact, because we've seen all sorts of weird permutations out there. But I have a link in the show notes, and it's an article that talks to a gentleman named John Willis. John is one of the co-authors of the DevOps Handbook with Gene Kim, Jez Humble, and Patrick Dubois.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he makes some compelling points. And the title is very simply DevSecOps. It's just a name. Get over it. I first ran into this because I follow John on Twitter, and he posted the link to it, and there's people that disagree with him, and you should feel free to disagree with him, but I think it's worth a read. And his point is that, yes, we can get over obsessed with names and this tribalism over them. But what's more important about the concept of DevSecOps is that we really start thinking about how we do security day to day and how we build software and how do we do it at speed with DevOps. So I've got a link in the show notes for that. And so that just got me thinking down the list of, you know, where do you get started? Right? There's so much to do. And, you know, from my perspective, it was number one about thinking, hey, don't check in passwords, right?
Right.
Because have you ever done that, Mickey?
Checked in a password?
Sure. You know, you put a password in your code, you know, maybe a connection string to a SQL Server database.
So I'm going to answer that with, Brian, we just talked about how I rotated the same three or four passwords across multiple accounts. So the fact that I didn't follow that best practice, what do you think?
I'm thinking it's quite possible you may have.
Yes, it is quite possible that I have in the past. Hopefully I have not done that lately.
So the good thing for Mickey, though, is Mickey is not alone in the woods here. So many people do it and have done it so much that GitHub, which is, you know, this center of the open source universe, has a feature called token scanning. And what they do is they look for well-known types of password tokens, the format of what people would use to log into services, most notably things like cloud services, like AWS or Azure. And what they'll do is when they find it, they will alert you to let you know that you've done this. Because it turns out that the bad people out there are doing the same thing, and that they've written bots to go scan these open source repos looking for people's passwords. And when they find them, they do bad things with them.
Think about it. Because people are checking in like personal access tokens that give them access to, as you said, AWS or, you know, Azure DevOps or whatever the personal access token accesses. And in fact, I actually have a friend that was getting ready to go speak at a conference. And if I remember the story correctly, the day before he was supposed to speak, he was running all of his stuff one last time, and he accidentally checked in some code that had the personal access tokens in it, and it got caught in the scan, and they shut down the repo. And so he couldn't do the talk because he couldn't get it all back from them in time for the actual talk.
That's epic.
So, I mean, I think this is a really great thing that GitHub does as far as helping, as far as, you know, trying to verify that your code is, you're not putting anything in there that you don't want hackers or other people to screw you with later.
No, I think it's fantastic that it's provided. And, you know, it gets that point then of, okay, well, how do I not do this in the first place? And we've seen some improvements here. Visual Studio has some tools that in the later versions that when you compile, we'll see that, hey, you've got a password, what looks like to be a password in your code. And then Microsoft has a whole set of security code analysis tools out there, one piece of which is called CredScan, that you can add to your pipeline, and it will check your code in Azure DevOps when you go to do your build. Has it found anything? So that's very useful. And then I've got a couple of links to both GitHub and Azure, because the fundamental issue that is when you start getting into this process of thinking about building secure software, there's a lot of different places where your code goes wrong, right? Where, oh, you're using an open source library, and that open source library happens to have a bit of compromised code in it, right? Something that is exploitable by the bad people. And so there are different types of components you can add to your pipelines, and you can do, you know, there's all these different types that you look for. You can look for, you know, White Source has one called White Source Bolt that's available for free, and you can get that on GitHub for GitHub Actions, or you can use it for Azure Pipelines, in that it will go through your code and say, hey, you're using these five open source libraries. And guess what we found out? There are some security alerts for three of them. So those are just examples. And this is my point where we'll probably have to do some follow-ups and go into some stuff, because another area that's hot is containers. What do you do about when something, you know, gets into one of the base images that's part of your chain for your containers?
Wow, I've never really thought about that, because you always think of containers. I think a lot of people think of containers as being very safe because they're self-contained.
Exactly. And so, you know, you're only as safe as the thing you're built on top of.
And also, I mean, and a lot of what we've talked about here when we're talking about security with quote DevOps has been focused more, it's been focused on the pipeline, on the CI/CD aspect. But there's also aspects of security you just need to be aware of, as far as, you know, who has access to your repo, who has access to work items, that's a whole area that also has to be considered.
Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, it's funny, you know, I mentioned containers, and then I mentioned Patrick Dubois earlier, and I realized, as I mentioned that, I got his company on. He doesn't work for Chef. He works with Sync. And Sync is a company that has a free plugin, as well as they sell some advanced products that you can hook into your pipeline to look at your containers and stuff like that. So, you know, his talk that he did last week at DeliveryConf was, you know, how do you know your build servers are secure? Right? That's the perfect way to get bad stuff into your production application that then goes out to the world and then compromises your users, and you don't even know you did it.
So TLDR, security is important.
It's also hard.
And it's hard. Take care of it. Put the effort in to make it work.
Yeah, so there's one of the final links I put in the show notes is the security at GitHub homepage. GitHub is, I really am happy that they're putting so much effort into think about how we get security in as a data and experience for teams building software, whether it's open source, inner source, or just your next big idea. And I think that's what we have to start doing as we think about it. I think that's an important thing. You made a point about the fact that, you know, security touches all those different areas, not just the pipelines, but, you know, how we build it, how we design it, all those things.
Awesome. I now am a firm believer, though I have been a firm believer for at least a couple of weeks now. So, Brian, where can people find you if they want to ask you more questions or ask you for a tall tale about one of your adventures?
Well, I'll be at VS Live speaking. So if you want to see me in person, that's the next place. You can see last week's show notes for that, or you can Google me and find me on the VS Live website. I'm on Twitter at Brian Randall. You can find my blog, blog.brianreynolds.com, and you can always email me at brianr@mcwtech.com.
And I will also be at VS Live Las Vegas in March with Brian. We will be imparting some DevOps goodness, and then I'll also be doing some other talks where I'll also be imparting some goodness.
Well, is it another type of goodness, or is it DevOps goodness as well?
I'm sure it's DevOps goodness, but it's a different type of DevOps goodness.
Well, we are going to spend a lot of time with GitHub. We're doing a full-day hands-on workshop first.
We are indeed, which I'm actually looking forward to, because I think it's going to have some really good information for people, especially if you've not really ever dived into GitHub, GitHub Actions, all that kind of stuff. I think they're going to really enjoy it. Plus, it's us.
It's us. They can spend time with us. So it'll be fun.
Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on my website at mickeygousset.com or Twitter at mickey_gousset, because I haven't gotten cool enough to take the underscore out of my Twitter handle yet. I still like my old man Twitter handle, okay, boomer. And then, or you can email me at mickey.gousset@microsoft.com. You can also find out more about the show at devops.fm, or if you want to let us know how we're doing, or ask us questions or suggest topics that you'd like us to cover on the show, you can either hit us up on Twitter or you can send us an old-fashioned email at theshow@devops.fm.
You do that very well, Mickey. You could be in radio.
Potentially. I mean, I do audiobooks.
You do.
And maybe I'll include a link to my audiobooks in the show notes too, just because I can and Brian can't stop me.
That's right.
So, with that, I want to say thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye. Post show!
Host show. I'm not allowed to yell anything anymore. So, anytime I want to yell, I'm going to whisper. Post show.
Post show.
So, Brian, what do you want to talk about post show? Because I have a story.
Okay, but... I'm gonna just tell you the one thing. Last week was before, and this week is after the premiere of Star Trek Picard.
Is it worth $15 a month?
First of all, it's not $15 a month.
Just give me my. I'm rounding up a little bit.
No, it's $9.99 a month if you want commercial free, and it's like $5.99 or $5 if you want commercials.
Is it worth $10 a month?
So for me, yes, because I am a huge Star Trek fan. Love the Next Generation. I love Picard, and I really enjoy the show. I am a simple person. I don't overanalyze my science fiction. I enjoy it or I don't.
Oh, we would not get along very well, because I always overanalyze my science fiction.
Especially
if they put rules in place and then they start breaking their science rules. I have issues with that.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm perfectly happy. I did sign up. I was able to get, I used basically the free week via my iPad because that was the quickest thing. Because I actually tried to go to their website and I think it was one of my browser anti pop-up blocking spammy things. Wouldn't let me actually pay for it. I actually created the account, but wouldn't let me pay for it. So this week I was able to transfer over and I got a month free. And so I'll be able to watch a couple more episodes and decide, but I can see myself keeping it because of the existing library of content there, but we'll see. I might cancel it because the fundamental issue is I just don't get to watch that much TV, or I guess the kids don't call it TV anymore, but I don't watch streaming or anything that much. I'm lucky if I get one show in a week.
The only time I watch streaming nowadays is when I get on the treadmill. So, or when I'm traveling, like on the plane, I'll sometimes record, download shows and watch them there. But like in the evenings when I'm getting ready for bed, my evening routine, which we should do a talk about that sometime, what our morning routine and evening routines are. That will be another show. But my evening routine does not involve watching video. It involves reading and a couple other things, just because watching TV actually doesn't help me get ready to go to sleep. So after 9 o'clock, I'm trying not to watch a video. But I want to get it. I liked the two seasons of Discovery that I watched. and I'd like to see where the third season goes. And I've always loved Picard because I grew up Next Generation just like you. So I'll probably end up biting the bullet and giving it a shot, at least to watch Picard, if nothing else.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, wait till it gets done, binge it, stay away from this stuff. You know, I don't, you know, as a Star Trek fan, because it is building on existing lore, I don't think you're going to find it as, like with The Mandalorian, it was so new and it could do kind of so much differently because the main character was not anyone we knew.
Right.
They had a lot of things of places that they could go. Whereas Picard has to kind of see, he's still Jean-Luc Picard. So anyway, I won't talk about the show until a few weeks later when you've seen it, and then we can come back to it. But bottom line is, I was happy. So you have a story to tell, though.
I have a couple of things I want to talk about. Real quick, I want to talk about the fact that I had some friends of mine that I've known since college that have moved back to a town near me, Starkville. Go Bulldogs, Mississippi State University's there. And they invited me to come play the Star Wars role-playing game. Now, we used to play Star Wars role-playing game back in college, and it was very simple. It was based off just regular six-sided dice. So now they've got a new version of the Star Wars role-playing game out. It's actually set, it's called like Edge of the Empire. It's set in the Outer Rim. I mean, the outer, where all the Mandalorian stuff's happening. It's set in all those planets. I should know my Star Wars lore better than this. But the dice are what's weird because it doesn't use regular dice. The dice have four different types of symbols on them for like a hit, miss, and two other things. And it's just how they combine together. And what I found was interesting is my friends have been playing it for a while. So they can roll these dice and they're instantly like, oh, okay, here's the results. I roll the dice and it's like learning a new language. It takes me like about 15 seconds to, because I haven't got all the symbols imprinted in my head as far as what they mean and how they counteract with each other. So I found that kind of fascinating because when I play other games like Yahtzee, when I play Yahtzee with my kids, they can roll the dice and I can instantly go, oh, four of a kind. Oh, full house. And with the Star Wars role-playing game, I'm having a little more trouble.
Well, it's just, you don't know it. It's brand new. But correct. It sounds like the dice on one hand are more like Dungeons and Dragons, that they're shaped differently. They're not just standard, correct. But because of the symbolography, the symbols on them, it's causing you some pain.
But I have missed playing role-playing games. So I had a really good time. So unfortunately, now that I'm going to start traveling again, I may not get to play as much, but it's worth the hour and 15 minute drive to play. So I did that. So the other thing is, if you'll remember at the top of the show, I talked about the fact that I was having my floors redone. Well, I have a house that has a basement, which is unusual in Mississippi. But it's a finished basement for the most part. So we put the cats in the basement while they were doing the floors because the cats don't go outside. And of course, the workmen had the doors open because they were carrying stuff in and out of the house the whole time. And the cats were in the basement. Well, the workmen got done Saturday and Sunday night, one of my cats, they're back upstairs Sunday night, and one of my cats just comes right around the corner with a mouse in its mouth.
Excellent.
And mice are really small. Mm-hmm. And so the cat goes, look what I did, and then drops it, and the damn thing's still alive. So then the thing takes off running, and we spend, it's like Tom and Jerry almost, trying to catch this thing and finally get rid of it. But I think what happened is having all the cats downstairs in the basement has chased this booger up into the house. Either that or one of the maybe it got in because the door was open from the workmen coming in and out because it's cold outside and warm in the house. So of course I put out the regular mouse traps that, you know, snap the neck. But I also started doing some research on these devices you can plug in your wall and they emit ultrasonic frequencies that are supposed to drive out bugs and supposed to drive out mice. Now, the more research I did, the more I realized there's really no scientific proof that it works. And, but I figure for $30, I can buy enough to cover the entire house. So why not give it a try? Worst case, I've put up night lights because they have little blue lights on them around the entire house. but I've given them a shot. You read the reviews, and some say works great, some say they don't work. So hopefully I'll be able to report back in a few weeks and let you know if there's been any other mice sightings.
I hope you don't have a full Tom and Jerry experience when you get back from our trips.
And the other thing I've finally done, and I'm saying this here because I want evidence and proof to Tiago Pascal, who is one of my teammates and a good friend of Brian's, that this has happened. At the MVP Summit 2019, I was talking with Peter Provost about Internet of Things and Raspberry Pis. And I ordered me a Raspberry Pi at a dinner that we all went to. Walking home that night, I ordered me a Raspberry Pi. Well, it's been sitting on my shelf and sitting on my shelf and not doing anything with it. And Tiago has made the comment that, oh, it's going to be MVP 2020 and nothing's happened with it yet. Well, by golly, 2 days ago, I pulled it out. I put it together. I turned it on. I got the operating system installed. And in my mind, that counts as doing something with it. Tiago says that doesn't count as doing something with it. But so I'm trying to figure out exactly what I want to do. And Anthony Borton, also a teammate of mine, who's also a good friend of Brian's, has provided me several ideas for things I could potentially try to do with the Pi. So sometime over the next month, I'm going to try to do something with my Raspberry Pi. So if you're a listener who stuck around this far into the show, thank you so much. And if you have any suggestions on what I should do with my Raspberry Pi and want to send me some links, that would be great. Otherwise, what I'm probably going to do is install VS Code on it and use it as a Python development box.
That's awesome.
So I feel like I've talked a lot on this show, and I'm very sorry if I have. So, Brian, you got any last words you want to leave our listeners with?
No, I'm just really happy. And, you know, as Mickey said, thank you if you're still listening, because this is us learning. Hopefully in a year, it'll be like that code you wrote 5 years ago. You know, I'm going to hate these shows a week from now, but hopefully we'll get better. It'll be more entertaining, and we'll continue to improve. At some point this year, we will probably have a couple guests on different shows. But yeah, this is a lot of fun. I love it because I get to talk to my buddy Mickey, and you know, there's definitely things I'm learning every show. So hopefully you are too. So yeah, if you're still here, thanks for listening, and be good humans.
Bye, everybody.